Good morning. Today's daf is Samech Hey. We are on Samech Dalman Beis. We're halfway down in the Amud. We're at the two dots. Let's review. The Mishnah yesterday on Samech Dalman Aleph taught us that you marry a woman, and Rachmanis, you don't have children. So at what point in time do you have to recognize the fact that for whatever reason, you and her, it's just not a match in terms of having children. So the Mishnah taught us 10 years. We spent a good amount of time yesterday's daf going over how exactly we know that it's a 10-year deadline, but it is a 10-year deadline. We entertained for a moment yesterday that maybe we should market correct based on lifespan, current lifespan. So the Gemara says, no, we're not market correcting, meaning it's 10 years. Okay. So, and after 10 years, what happens? So, ein rosha levato. So at that point in time, as far as the man is concerned, so he must recognize at this point in time that it's just simply not working out, which means one of two things, as we learned in yesterday's daf. Number one, he could take on a second wife. Meaning she herself, as far as she herself is concerned, she's not chayv in the mitzvah puravu. So she can maintain the marriage. Later today, we're going to talk about she could still make an argument in terms of why it is that she'd like to have children. But we'll come back to that later on this morning. But anyway, as far as the mitzvah is concerned, so she doesn't have a mitzvah puravu. And again, later today, we're also going to talk about there is a daya. There is a shita that says that women are obligated in the mitzvah puravu. But that's coming up later on. But again, let me just reiterate, she doesn't have a mitzvah peruvo. So as far as she's concerned, okay, so she can maintain the marriage. But as far as he's concerned, he has a mitzvah to do. So he could do one of two things. So he can either take on a second wife, or he could divorce her and then take on a new wife. Or either way. In other words, he's got to try to be mekayim the mitzvah peruvo. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. So girsha mutar sin asel acher. So he divorces her. She's allowed to marry somebody else, meaning at this point in time, again, why didn't they have children? We don't know. But certainly that's not going to bar or ban her from marrying another man. She could marry another man, said the Mishnah. So, okay. And then the Mishnah talked about how miscarriage resets the 10-year clock. But anyway, so we learned in the Mishnah that if she, after the first husband, 10 years have come and gone, and she hasn't had children, she can marry a second husband. Okay. The Gemara starts off a really basic discussion. And that is, at what point in time do we establish a chazaka? Okay, so we know a chazaka is a fixed pattern. Once you have a fixed pattern, so then you can assume that the fixed pattern is fixed, meaning to say that whatever the pattern is, the pattern will continue that way. And at what point in time is a pattern being created? So hopefully you're thinking to yourself the number three. Okay, you're right, but it's an incomplete answer, meaning it's a machlokas. Machlokas tanaim, whether a pattern is established at two or three. And as we're going to see now, our Mishnah seems to be setting the pattern at two. The Gemara makes this point, and this is where we're beginning this morning. Girshu Mutara, Sheni Inshli Shilom. So as far as our Mishnah is concerned, so our woman can marry the first husband, can marry the second husband, but seemingly that's the limits. Meaning, she went 10 years with the first husband, 10 years with the second husband, and now for her to marry another husband, and that husband expecting her to be able to have a child, it's too late. Meaning she's already established a pattern too, admittedly, but she's already established a pattern that she's not going to have children. So Masisin Mani Rebbe He. So I'm just following the sheet of Rebbe. Did Tanya Willenton Abraisa. Mala Risha Nome Sheni Ameshli Shilosa Lo Tamil Divir Rebbe. So Rebbe says patterns are established after two times. So yeah, you gave a meal to the first child, then Rachmanis, the child died. You did it to the second child, also died. So at that point in time, you got to stop and desist. Meaning at that point in time, a pattern is established that the children cannot handle Mila, and therefore you don't do it a third time. That Shita's Rebbe. And Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, Amar Shlishi Tamo, Revilo Tamo. And Rebbe Shimon Gamliel says, no, you'll do a Mila on the third one, and if Rachmanis, the third one, dies, so then you won't do it on the fourth one. So what we have over here is a really basic machlokas in terms of the number that's necessary in order to establish a chazaka, a machlokas between Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon Gamliel. Rebbe says the number is two, and now the pattern is established. Rebbe Shimon Gamliel says the number is three, and then the pattern is established. As far as our Mishnah is concerned, our Mishnah is going like the Shita of Rebbe, not like the Shita of Rebbe Shimon Gamliel. The Gemara says, okay, all's well and good, meaning we have a machlokas, that's fine. Problem now is that we have a Braisa. The Braisa presented us the opinions of Rebbe and Shimon Gamliel, but flipped. And so now, the Gemara doesn't quote the Braisa, but in other words, it's the same Braisa, just with a flipped viewpoint, where Rebbe says three and Rebbe Shimon Gamliel says two. And so now, which Braisa is authoritative, which Braisa is correct? So the Gemara says, Amin Ayach Renaisa. Well, let's figure out which brisa came at a later point in time. As Rashi points out over here, the Gemara's assumption is that whatever brisa is the later brisa is the one that is edited, corrected. And so let's see if we could figure out which brisa came later. So Tashma, Gemara attempts to do so. There's a story with four sisters in Tzipori, Shemala Vishana Umeis, Shni Umeis, Shlishi Umeis. So each one of the sisters had a child, a son, and the first one, second one, third one, all gave their children Brismila, and they died. Revi'is, Ba'liv Ne'er Shem and Gamliel. Then what happens is that the fourth sister had a son, brought the son over to Shem and Gamliel, and Amala, Alti Moli. And Rashi and Gamliel says, don't do it. Don't give the baby a bris milah. Okay, so, comes out over here that in this story, so first of all, the obvious interesting point is that we're not talking about one woman having a child, father, my child, father, my child. In other words, we're talking about sisters over here. The Gemara is totally understanding and recognizing, not using the language we use, but that there's some sort of genetic issue. And the sisters obviously are sharing this genetic issue in which their children are dying. So, and what we're seeing over here is that what is exactly, at what point in time do we establish a pattern? So it's three and not two. Okay. Because they came to Rashi and Gamliel after the third and he said, don't do the fourth. So the Gemara says, well, that's interesting. How about this? Well, maybe if the third one would have went to Rashi and Gamliel, he also would have said, don't give him a bris milah. Isn't that possible? So, imkein may asadusa derabbi cheber abba. So the Gemara says, yeah, but this is sadus. This is edus. In other words, we're testifying over here. We're not just recalling a story that occurred. Here's the incident that happened. No, in other words, edus, we're testifying to the story in that we are giving over halacha in the story. And that means the Rashi and Gamliel was asked specifically after the fourth because we know that after the, sorry, he was asked after the third because we know that if he was after the second, he would have said, we don't have a chazaka as of yet. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the whole point of the story is that we're not going to say this by one woman and multiple children, but maybe we'll say this even by sisters as well. Meaning, isn't that in of itself a chiddush? Meaning, maybe the chiddush over here has nothing to do with the number. It just has to do with the fact that it's sisters. So So the Gemara says, okay, the Gemara basically backs off. Meaning, from this brisa that we just learned together, not perfectly clear which is the later brisa. Anyway, Amarava Hashad Amar Achayes Mechaskos. So the Gemara says, now that we can establish a pattern by sisters, again, the way we would say it, that there are genetic conditions. So Lo Yisa Adam Isha Lo Mimishbachas Nichvin Velo Mimishbachas Mitzrayim V'hudis Chazek Talsa Zimne. So marrying into a family where there's illness in that family, Gemara here points to a couple of illnesses, Nichvin and Mitzrayim. So, you could look it up in terms of translations. Anyway, the various illnesses. And if they're muhzek is three times over, so then at that point in time, a pattern is established that this kind of illness is associated with that family, and be cautious before marrying into the family. Okay. Obviously, okay, I feel like I'm saying this a lot lately, but these are really sensitive issues, and just because we learned a line of Gemara does not mean that we have any kind of proficiency on these topics. So, obviously, anything that has to do with practical halacha, so you will consult. You will not just learn a line of Gemara and therefore arrive at any kind of conclusion. Okay, good. So, my Havi Allah. Okay, so fine. So we are now discussing the larger topic of what creates a pattern. Is it the number two? Or is it the number three? And we're also left a little bit confused in terms of who said two and who said three. But for our purposes, let's assume right now that Rebbe said two and Rebbe Shimon Gamliel says three in terms of establishing a pattern. Good. So we have a machlokas. Who do we follow? That's a good question. So Rebbe Yitzchak Bar Yosef gives the following testimony. There was an episode in the city of Ma'on. It was Yom Kippur. Happens to be that Yom Kippur also fell at that Shabbos, on Shabbos that year. Umala Rishon Umeshneo Mesu Shlishis Balafanov. And so what happened was, is that you had, the first one who had a Mila, second one had a Mila, both of them died Rachmanus, and now the third one is being presented. Okay. And I'm assuming over here, first and second one happened earlier. In other words, we're dunning on the third one, whether or not there should be a Mila, And, oh, by the way, it was also Shabbos Yom Kippur. Okay. So there really are two basic questions over here. Number one, there's an Isser question, meaning, you know, you only can give a bris on Shabbos when it's Mila Bismana. So if it's not Mila Bismana, so then you can't do so. On top of that, there's also another very basic question, which is Sakanta, meaning maybe you shouldn't do the bris at all because the first two sons who got a bris died. So maybe we've already established a chazakah. So Amar la lechil moli. So the version over here, this question was posed to Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan said, do the Mila. Okay. And now, how do we know this episode? Because of a report given by Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef. He's the one who reported this episode. Amar le Abaye chazit dekashar sisur v'sakanta. So the so Abaye notes and Abaye says, wow. We were just matir both Isser, as we just got done saying, meaning it's Mila, the only Mila you could do is Mila Bismana, and he allowed that. And also he allowed Sakana as well, meaning it's dangerous. The first two sons died. And he said it's okay. Okay, so you're a matir Isser and Sakana. Samach labayva azanas balachuma. Barta di isi bereder of Yitzhak, bereder of Yehuda. Now with this information, Abai went ahead and married a woman. Now the woman had a history. The woman's name is Chuma, either way. The woman had a history, and the Gemara goes over the history of this woman. The Nasva Rachva de Pumbadisa Veshachiv. So her first husband that she married is Rachva, and he died. And Rav Yitzchak Bered de Rabba Barbarchana Veshachiv. And she married another man, and he died as well. So, a little bit of a katlanis. And I say a little bit over here. Okay, I'm understating a little too much. In other words, she's not a little bit of a katlanis. I mean, she was married to two men and they died. So now Abaye said, okay. So, but two doesn't establish a pattern. Three. Now again, how did Abaye know that information? Because of a report of what Rav Yochanan did on one Yom Kippur Shabbos in the town of Ma'on, where he allowed for the third baby to get a bris milah. So in other words, two doesn't establish a pattern. Three establishes a pattern. And so Abaye thought, same thing over here. In other words, she only killed two men. Okay. We haven't established a pattern. Vinaspahu, so he married her, Vishachiv, and Abai died. Okay. So, Amarava mi'ikad da'avid uvda benafshe kihai. Now, Arava is just, he's beside himself.
Didn't you say before that, like, everyone was like, there's enough Eli in
the road to just... you read my mind. Oh, Mama, she read my mind. Right, what Ben points out, and I was thinking the same thing as well. Right, for those listening at home, by the way, and are confused, there are two Bens in this room. Okay, so for purposes of clarity. Anyway, so I was wondering the same thing also. The second Ben was wondering as well. The second Ben is me. So the Gemara tells us that Abai and Rava are descendants of Eli, and they were not expected to live long lives. Okay, and the Gemara over here just. Right, it glosses over that information, and I think it's important, but okay, the Gemara doesn't mention it. Okay, so and what Rav is now marveling is that I can't believe Abai did that. I can't believe it. Meaning he married a woman who, again, historically, I'm not saying this literally, but killed off two men. Okay, and I should say it a little more carefully and a little more sensitively, but in other words, she killed off two men. And now Abai went ahead and took the risk of marrying her, and then he died. I can't believe it. And ki have ha iud amar avin desamcha yitzak sumcha lav bar samcha. And on top of that, I heard from Abai himself, meaning when getting reporting of what Rav Yochanan did. So there's people that you trust, and there's people that you don't trust as much. So Rav Yitzchak, that's somebody you don't trust so much. Avin, who happens not to be here, but if you hear a report given by Avin regarding Rav Yochanan, that you trust. Avin yeshna bechazara Yitzchak simcha inu bechazara. Avin went over all the teachings of Rav Yochanan again and again. So you hear something from Avin, that you could trust. You hear something from Rabbi Yitzchak, be a little bit skeptical. Meaning, he's good, he went to shir, but just be a little bit skeptical. Okay. So the Gemara says, and on top of that as well. Meaning, look, we know that there's a machlokes between Rabbi and Rishim and Gamla regarding Amila and the babies. Are they also going to argue as far as Nisun is concerned? So the Gemara says no. On that point in, you know, no, there are, their argument is going to be a consistent argument anytime we're establishing patterns. When we're in the topic of pattern establishment, we're going to have a machlokus between Rabbi and Rav Shimon and Gamliel. So on this last point, there is a machlokus, meaning the Gemara for a moment thought, maybe my marriage, there's no debate. No, there's a debate by marriage as well. How do I know that, Tanya? Nisus Larishon Amei, she married the first man, he died. Lisheni Amei, she married the second man, he died. Lishlishi Slosinasi Divri Rebbe. So Rebbe says, okay, so now, don't marry, whoever's a potential candidate to marry her as her third husband, don't do it. In other words, because you're taking your life into your hands. You're risking your life. And Rav Shimon Gamliel Amar Lishishi Tanasi L'Revi Lo Sinasi. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, for the third man, no, he can marry her. Now, if he happens to die, okay, so then the fourth man should marry her. Again, this is everyone Lishita. So Rebbe says, two establishes a pattern, and Rav Shimon Gamliel says, three establishes a pattern. Anyway, but what we got over here is that this discussion of patterns is not limited to Mila. It applies also to marriage as well. So the Gemara says, look, as far as Mila is concerned, so I understand the Gemara here basically is talking about hemophilia and it running in the family. I get it. So, and once the pattern is established, so then I understand what the concern is. But, Ella, Nisuin, my time. But with this woman now, who her first husband died, her second husband died. Now, in other words, I said it not carefully earlier. She didn't kill the husbands. In other words, they died as a result of being married to her, but she didn't kill them. Meaning, what's the issue over here? What is the connection, correlation, or in this case, causation of her marriage to him and his death? So, Amar Lei Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi Hacham Rav Imi Me'agurni Mishmei De Rav Huna Mayan Gorim. So the Gemara is going to give two possible causalities. So one causality is Mayan Gorim. Okay, now, I have no way to try to explain this in any kind of modern way, but that's fine. I don't have to. In other words, but Mayan Gorim, meaning the act of intimacy that he has with her, somehow, in ways I cannot describe, so it's lethal. Okay, so, and then we can go back to what I said earlier. In other words, she killed him. Okay, but again, it's still an imprecise way to say it because it's not intentional, and we understand. But for whatever reason, Mayan Gorim, that's one possible causality. And Rav Ashi Amar Mazel Gorim. And Rav Ashi says, no, it's not Mayan Gorim, it's Mazel Gorim. So this is going to be even more challenging for me to try to explain to you what this is. But again, it just simply means that for reasons that I cannot articulate, but there's some metaphysical cause, Mazel Gorim, that when she marries a man, so that's it. In other words, the man dies. But nothing to do with the act of intimacy. It's something that's metaphysical. Okay, so basically a machlokus amongst the Amoraim, whether her causality of her husband's death is either physically related or metaphysically related. But regardless, though, it's, in other words, the pattern is established, and it's just a question of when the pattern is established. Is it going to be a two or is it going to be a three? So my Beinayu, now the Gemara wants to know what's the nafkamina, whether causality is physical or metaphysical. So the Gemara says a simple and obvious nafkaminas. So Ika Beinayu Dariso Omeisi Nami Danafal Midiklo Omeisi. So the Gemara says, well, let's say they only went through Erisin, meaning no intimacy. Or let's say he died by an accident, in other words, having nothing to do with her. Okay. So Amalei Rav Yosef Brei Derav LaRav Abai Minei Rav Yosef Halacha Karebi Vamalei In. So now we have a simple question to ask over here. So we know that there's an establishment of pattern. We know it's Machlokes Shin Rebbe and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. We'd like to know now who the Halacha follows like. Rav Yosef does some inquiry on this, and he asks Rav, is the Halacha like Rabbi? And he says, yeah, the Halacha is like Rabbi. Okay, good. But then he follows up with another question. Halacha Karebi Shimon Gamliel Vamalei In. Is Allah like Rav Shimon Gamliel? He said yes. Okay, good. Wait just one second. Give me a moment. So we're confused, right? Yeah, of course we're confused. Meaning Rav Yosef now asking Rava who the halacha falls like, and is saying yes to both Rabbi and to Rav Shimon Gamliel. So achuchi achichbi. So the Gemara says, now what are you trying to do? You're trying to mock me? Meaning I need a straight answer. Is the pattern established after three or after two? And please help me out over here. And all you're doing is just saying yes to every question. So Amar Lei Lo Sasmehi, Lo Sasmehi, Upashalach nisuna malchus, I'm sorry. Upashalach nisuna malchus karebi, vesus ashuramur karashim gamliel. So the Gemara says, look, what you have to do is you have to take a tour of Shas, and you have to see Stam Mishnayos. And what you'll find is that when you're learning Stam Mishnayos, sometimes Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, when writing a Stam Mishnah, sides like Rabbi, and sometimes he sides like Rosh Hashanah Gamliel. And all you need to do is just simply follow the trends. And you'll see. So, Nisuin Hadamaran. So when it comes to marriages, so Rabbi was so same like Rabbi. Yeah, I said that right. Rabbi was so same like Rabbi. Meaning Rabbi Yehuda Anasi wrote the Stam Mishnah like the Shita of Rabbi. Now it happens to be he's Rabbi, but okay, fine. The point is that that's our Mishnah. Remember our Mishnah? A woman was married 10 years to one man, no children. Married 10 years to another man, no children. Ah, so at that point in time, the pattern is established. She's not going to have children. So that pattern is established after two. That's our Mishnah. Malchus did none, and the same thing is true regarding Malchus as well. This is a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Mishalaka Vishana Bezin, Konstantin Sola Kipa Machel, So Sarim Achete, Kreser Nifkas. So let's say you have a repeat offender. And so he received Malchios at once, and he received it again. And clearly he's not ready to conform. He's not ready to reform. So what do you do? So I know this is going to sound a little bit harsh, but Konstantinos Lekipa, Machilnos Osar, and Ashite Kreser Nifkas. You put him into some sort of incarceration. You give him barley, Michael Behema, and you allow his stomach to explode. Now, this sounds really, really harsh. Right now, I'm not gonna do it a fair treatment in terms of understanding this Mishnah.
Isn't this similar to the Sota also?
It's similar. It's definitely similar. Yeah. So anyway, but the point is that that repeat offenders are going to be dealt with harshly after a pattern of two times. So we have Nisuin, the pattern, the Stam Mishnah of two. We have Malchios, the Mishnah, the Stam Mishnah says two. Okay. Vestos did none. Now, what about Vestos? Vestos is a cycle. In order to have a woman establish a fixed pattern of, a fixed schedule of when she's expecting to be a Nida. Eina Isha Kovasla Vest, we're on the very top of Samachem and Aleph. Eina Isha Kovasla Vest, Ashe Tikvena Shalosh Pamim. Vein Metaris Mena Vest, Ashe Te Aker Mimena Shalosh Pamim. A woman having a fixed schedule for her Nida. So that fixed schedule is going to be after a pattern of three times. Then she'll have established Vest Kavua. Now, what does that mean, having a Vest Kavua? So Rashi over here writes that it has a couple of practical applications, La Halacha. So number one, Tumas Meis Leis. Now, I'm not going to explain it well today. So I will encourage you to do is just hang around here in the Daf Yomi for an additional 4 years. And then it's not a big ask. It's a reasonable ask. And then when we start Masechta Nida, Daf Beis Amud Aleph, so we will explain this a lot better on Daf Beis Amud Aleph and Nida, the last Masechta and Shas. Okay, not a big deal. Okay, and then, so she won't have Tumah Meis Leis. In other words, it will be only Daya Shaita. Again, I'm not going to explain it well now. And then another Nafka Minis points out Rashi, is that let's say, for example, she has a Vest Kavua, she has a fixed schedule established by a pattern of three, and then the next scheduled event, so let's say she didn't do a Bedika. Is she considered Nida? Yeah, she's considered Nida. Why? Because we assume that because she has a fixed schedule, so it came as per the fixed schedule. She didn't happen not to have checked at the time? Okay. And what about the Hargasha? Okay, great. Good question. We're going to move along. Anyway, what comes out over here is that when it comes to Anita and establishing her fixed schedule, the number is three. That's a Mishnah in Anita. And finally, Shoramua did not in a Shor Nasimuad, she had to bow Shlosh Pa'amim. When does a Shor become a Shoramuad? An animal gores. So an animal goring is an unusual behavior of the animal. And that's why when an animal gores, so the owner only pays Chatzi Nezek, only half damages. But then there comes a point in time where it's not unusual. Why? Because the pattern's been established. So when is the pattern established? So the Mishnah Baba Kama tells us the pattern is established after three times. So when it comes to Nezek, when it comes to damages, so you'll have establishment of pattern after three. So when Rava answered Rav Yosef, or is it the other way around? Am I saying it wrong? No, I was right. Well, no, good, good. When Rava says to Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef asked him the question. Halacha's like Rabbi? So Rava said, sure. Halacha's like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? Rava said, sure. And what are you doing? You're mocking me? So no, I'm not mocking you. All I'm doing is just simply pointing out that you go through your Stam Mishnahs throughout Shas, and what you're going to find are, sometimes Stam Mishnah is going like Rabbi, sometimes it's going like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Okay, now, what the Gemara does not do over here, which is a really important discussion, and I'm just going to raise the issue, and I'm not really going to properly explain it, is why does the Stam Mishnayos alternate and toggle between Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel? Why is it that sometimes the halacha is like Rebbe and sometimes the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel? And why are the Stam Mishnayos vacillating between these two positions? So there are reasons that are given. Right, the most obvious point that we can make right now, although again, this is a much longer topic, but the obvious thing that we can point out over here is that the two examples that the Stam Mishnah is going like Rebbe, not like Rav Shimon Gamliel, is basically when we're talking about life and death. But even as I say that, I fully appreciate and understand that that's not perfectly accurate. Meaning our Mishnah, we're not talking about the Katlanis in our Mishnah. What are we talking about? We're talking about a woman married for 10 years, unable to have children. That's not a katlanis. So even as I say that, I recognize that it really needs a lot more thinking, a lot more discussion in terms of trying to sort out why sometimes two, why sometimes three. Okay, let's go on. Tanu Rabbanan. We're in Samachem at Aleph, and we're four lines down. Gemara opens up with a brisa. So, let's say she married to the first man, no children. To the second man, no children. So, she shouldn't marry a third man unless the third man already has children. Once again, we're assuming right now she does not have a mitzvah peruvu. So, as far as her obligation to have children, she does not have an obligation to have children. And she marries a man with children, so everyone's fine. Meaning that third marriage is fine. However, nisas lemishe in labanim, but let's say she married somebody with no children, so teitzei belo ksuva. So, she will exit the marriage, but she will exit the marriage, but without a ksuva. Now, how do you know it's her fault? Because we have a fixed pattern that's been established. It could have been the husband's, but again, in other words, we're assuming that when it comes to this, two already establishes a pattern, and meaning like the Shita of Rebbe, so the pattern's been established two times already. Okay. Now, e by luhunisas lashishi velo hayulabanim mahu delitvo hanach kamai. So, let's say as follows. So, after the divorce with her first husband, she received a ksuva, because yet the pattern hasn't been established. Married to the second one, so she will exit and she will receive a ksuva. Now, this one, admittedly, is a little more interesting because that second one will establish the pattern, but the second one's still going to have to pay ksuva. Because, and I'm not perfectly sure how to say this, but the pattern will be established afterwards, but still, in other words, when they got married, the pattern yet has not been fully solidified. So she will get a ksuva from the second one. But the third one, however, she will not be receiving ksuva because, again, the pattern's been established. Okay, now it begs the question, what if he knew that and what if he accepted it anyway? Okay, and that's a really fair question. But regardless, right now the Gemara is making one single point, and that is she married a third man, and she's not having a child with the third man. So at that point in time, it is now been well established that she's unable to have children. Can the first and second husband go back to her and say, hey, give us back our money? Can that happen? Mm-hmm. So, at that point in time now, meaning after the termination of the first and second marriage, so basically we don't and can't assign fault. But once she's married to a third man and clearly not able to have children with that third husband, so at that point in time, so maybe we can now properly assign fault to her. And can the first and second come back to her and say, okay, that ksuva that we paid you, clearly you were not entitled to it. So Odilma Matzis Amra La Hashahu Dekachshe. On the other hand, her counter argument could be the following, and that is, no. When we were married, she could say this to both the first and second husband. When we were married, so at that point in time, I was totally prepared and able to have children. It was you. I can't have with a third. At this point in time, in other words, I've lived, meaning, and at this point in time, I've weakened. The condition has changed now, not early when I was married to either one of you. So which one of those arguments is the better argument? The Gemara says, Mistabra, Masasamra Luashu Dekashe. And to which the Gemara says, her argument that it's now that I've weakened, that's the better argument than either the first or second saying to her, now we can assign fault to you retroactively. Okay. Ibai Luhu Nisas Larivi of Ayulobanim Maud Tvi Lishlishi. So let's say the following. She married to the first husband, no children, second, no children, third, no children, and now she's married to a fourth. Okay, now who is allowed to marry her? So we already pointed out that the man already has children, so there's no problem with him marrying her. He already fulfilled the mitzvah of Peruvu. But lo and behold, she's married to the fourth man and she got children. Can she now go back to husband number three and say to husband number three, so I know that you got out of this marriage without having to pay me the ksuva, but now I feel like you owe me the ksuva, meaning I've had a child. Clearly now you wanted to assign fault to me, but you can't. I had a child with my fourth husband. So Amrinan La, so the Gemara opens up this discussion with the following. Here's how we would advise her. Shtikosach yafei midiburech. Right now, you being silent is going to work to your advantage. Why? Because if you go back to the third husband making a financial claim, he's going to say to himself, wait one second. I never wanted to divorce you to begin with. It's only because of our inability to have children, which is why I had to divorce you. But had I known that you were able to have children, I never would have divorced you. And then what he's going to do is call into question the get that he gave her. And he's going to say that I only gave the get al-tanai. Now, again, he didn't articulate it at the time, but it was kind of evident. And now, if the get is in fact challenged, what does that mean? It means that the get may not have been a valid get. It means now that she had a child with somebody else with a questionable get that was given to her. That child now is a mamzer, or certainly a possible mamzer. And so, therefore, we say to this woman, after having a child with the fourth husband, say nothing. You're better off that way. You will not jeopardize the status of your children. Now, Maska Flora Papa says, wait one second. I did not follow that discussion at all. Meaning, if what you're arguing is, in fact, a valid argument that the third husband is going to be challenging again if she says something, say, I got news for you. Even if she doesn't say anything, meaning once the third husband learns that she had a child with the fourth, isn't he going to be calling into question the get that he gave her? Will we be quiet? Meaning, by her having a child with the fourth husband, the third husband automatically, once he learns this, is going to challenge the get and call into question the get that he gave her, and the children are going to be a mamzerim. Meaning, it's just simply in of itself not a valid argument. Ela amrin and hashuhu debriyasa. So what we're going to say is the following. She can't go back to the third husband. She can't demand a ksuva from the third husband. She had a child with the fourth husband. Well, remember how we said moments earlier this morning that maybe she weakened with a subsequent husband? Could also be maybe she strengthened with her fourth husband. Meaning people's medical conditions change over the course of time. And just because she's in a position at one point in her life does not necessarily mean that she's going to be in that position for the duration of her life. Now, I know this goes against the whole principle of chazaka, meaning the whole principle of chazaka is that we do have a fixed pattern. That part's true. However, what we're not going to do is just simply go back retroactively and say, well, once we have a fixed pattern, now we can go back and litigate earlier cases. No, that we're not going to do. Meaning once she married a fourth man and she had a child with the fourth man, we're not going to go back and litigate that third, because when the third married her and divorced her because they couldn't have children, we have to work with what's given with us at that time. At the time, she had a pattern of not having children. And at that time, she forfeits her ksuva. Yes, later on, she may get married successfully, have a child, but that's not going to allow us to go back and litigate something that happened previously. Hu amar mina v'hi amra mine. Okay, so upon the conclusion of a marriage, so each one assigning fault to the other for not having children. So Am Rabbi Ami Dvarim Shebeino Leveina Ne'emenes. So in terms of who's given more credibility, so she's given more credibility. V'tayim amayi kamala biyar kechetz v'hu hu lo kimle biyar kechetz. So the Gemara says that she will have better bodily awareness of who exactly is more responsible for the lack of children. Right? The Gemara says it very graphically that she will be able to have that sensation that he was either potent or impotent. So Amr Iwe Ezel Insiv Isisav Ivduk Nafshai. So he now is going to say the following. Look, we're now contesting as to whose fault it is. And how about this? How about now you're saying that I'm impotent and I'm unable to have another child? How about if I just take on another wife? Oh, and we'll see. So Amr Rabbi Ami Afazu Yosef Yitink Suva Shani Omer Kolanosi Isha Alisha Yosef Yitink Suva. So which Rabbi Ami says no, nothing doing, meaning that it is not within his right to just simply bring in another wife into the marriage in order to test whether he's potent or impotent. And so no, in other words, at that point in time, if they're unable to have children and it's been 10 years, the marriage terminates and he must pay her ksuva. Now Rav Amar Nosi Adam Kamen Hashem Alisha Vehu Diislei Lemizanayu. Rav disagrees. Rav is of the position that no, as long as he can afford it. So he can bring in another wife into the marriage. Okay. So next sequence of back and forth. Hu amar apalt bego asar, vihi amar lo apalt. So he says that you miscarried sometime during the 10 years. Remember what we learned in our Mishnah? That any miscarriage that occurs during the 10 years resets the 10-year clock. Okay. So his claim is that you miscarried, meaning I don't have to divorce you at this point in time. Sometime during the 10 years, your clock was reset. So I do not have to divorce you at this point in time. And quite frankly, he's probably saying this right now because can't afford the ksuva. And she says, nope, never happened. Meaning there was no miscarriage at this point. And 10 years have come and gone. And at no point in time was there a reset. And at no point in time was there a reset of the clock. And she said, okay. And the 10 years now are up. So, so who do we believe? So, Am Rabbi Ami Afazu, he ne'emenes. So, Rabbi Ami says that she's going to be afforded the credibility, extended the credibility, the imisa, the pila nafsha, ba'akras ala mechaska. Because if in fact, she did miscarry, she'd be more than, and I know this is going to sound a little strange, but she'd be more than happy to forward that information. Why? Because miscarrying is a better situation than having no miscarriage whatsoever. Meaning having no miscarriage whatsoever basically would indicate that she's an akara, that she's sterile. By having a miscarriage means that she is able to have a child. It just happens to be that her first attempt was unsuccessful. But at least there is fertility over there. So if she's making the argument that she never miscarried during the 10 years, so basically it puts her in a worse position. Therefore, she's extending more credibility. So let's say she miscarried Rachmanis 3 times. So now a pattern is fixed. She is fertile, but at the same time also, the pattern is fixed that she miscarries. Hu amar apila trei v'hi amra tlas. So he says that you miscarried twice. She says I miscarried 3 times. He says that his argument is that I do not need to divorce you at this point in time. And her counter argument is, no, you do. In other words, because I have a pattern of miscarrying. So Amr Yisrael Bar Lazar, Uvdu Ahava Be Majashava Amru, he mehemna. Again, who's afforded more credibility in these counter claims? She's afforded more credibility. Because again, her claim is going to be more self-incriminating. In other words, I don't like that terminology. It's going to just simply put her in a worse position Because now, by her saying that she miscarried three times, she now is saying that she has a chazaka, she has a pattern of miscarrying. So because it puts her in a worse position, it's not, right, incrimination, there's no criminal activity. It's just simply a pattern of events. But for her to say that she miscarried on three occasions puts her in a worse position, and so therefore she's going to be extended credibility for her claim, even though his counterclaim is only two, not three. Okay, Adkan, we're going to pause over here. Tomorrow we're going to start with the mitzvah Puravu, and are women obligated in the mitzvah Puravu? The answer is no, but as we'll learn tomorrow, it's a machlokas tanayim, and we'll go over the back and forth. Okay, let's quickly recap. Let's review our day today. We learned together what establishes a pattern. So it's either going to be two or three events that's going to establish a pattern. It is a machlokus between Rabbi and Rishim and Gamliel. And although we had conflicting brises of who said what, so let's just say it simply. Rabbi says two, Rishim and Gamliel says three. When Rava asked Rav Yosef, other way around, when Rav Yosef asked Rava, who does the halacha follow like? So Rava just kept answering, yes. Halacha's like Rabbi? Yes. Halacha's like Rishim and Gamliel? Sure. So how can that be? And the answer is it's because we have Stam Mishnayos throughout Shas that split the difference. Sometimes the Stam Mishnah goes like Rabbi, sometimes the Stam Mishnah goes like Rishim and Gamliel. Okay, we did not make sense of it in terms of when we go like Rabbi and when we go like Rishim and Gamliel. That's an important discussion, which we didn't have. Now, for the rest of today's daf, we basically go over claim and counterclaim. Okay, a lot of litigation between the two in terms of is she entitled to uksuva, is she not entitled to uksuva, can she retroactively go back to previous husband and have a claim of entitlement to uksuva. So we went over a number of different cases where claim and counterclaim and who is extended more credibility. Typically, right, in other words, we went over a lot of cases, typically she is given more credibility than he is. But again, that's I don't want to say it that simply, but as a summary of today's daf, certainly there was more times that she is extended credibility than he is. I'd come.